and welcome to another edition of Money Matters. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for joining me today on the 324th show of your economic forum entitled, as I said, Money Matters. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Once again, today's show is entitled, How High is Too High? Remember, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. Indices that I may mention today are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results, and investing involves risk. Depending on the types of investments, there may be varying degrees of risk, etc., etc. This show is about money, as money is matter. Matters money affects us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet in some way or another. It controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, it's about you. Okay, so it's an interesting note today. You know, Tesla stock, not a recommendation to buy or sell any securities today. Okay, remember that. Tesla, you know, has just been like, I think it's the most valuable car company on the planet. I think it's close to the most valuable company on the planet. And it's because of this EV sort of thing, you know, electric vehicles and Elon Musk and, you know, kind of like a Steve Jobs, right? In any case, it's been on fire and on fire, and, you know, they absorb SolarCity, so now they make solar panels, or they always did. It's just they were two separate companies. And everybody was convinced that Tesla would be the number one EV electric vehicle maker in the entire planet. Lo and behold, the second largest car company in the world is Volkswagen. Now, you remember Volkswagen had some issues with, you know, monkeying around with their smog computers. So the smog computers showed there was less smog coming out than there actually was. And a lot of VPs at Volkswagen were fired, and they had to pay a huge fine, and some said the company would go under, and et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, so it surrounded mostly, I think, their diesels and some other cars. Don't hold me on that, but we all know Volkswagen got in trouble. Well, still, they are, by market capitalization, I think the second largest car company on the planet. And it's kind of been a anemic kind of stock, you know, 12, 13, 14, 20, 25 bucks. And a couple of days ago, they basically came out and they said, look, we're going to be making some battery factories, and we're going to be investing in EV, and we plan to make such and such, you know, EV cars. We're supposed to make, you know, more EV cars than anybody on the planet by 2025, which is right around the corner. And the stock just started to rise, and it started to rise, and started to rise, and was up, 40% this week. So don't know if it'll keep going. And again, not a recommendation to buy or sell any security. But it is interesting. They were the first company to be talked about to rival Tesla. And then I saw an analyst come out and basically said, nah, Tesla's may not be number one. And he was short Tesla, the stock, which means he's betting on a fall. Surprisingly enough, Tesla really hasn't backed off much so far at the time I've recorded this show. But, yeah, there you go, right? So we'll see if Volkswagen can light a fire under Tesla or et cetera, and we'll see for there for sure. Okay, remember, views expressed are my opinions only, may not necessarily reflect those of the station and staff members or underwriters. So, yes, how high can this market go? Well, you know, I think I told you about 8-10 weeks ago that I was a little hesitant about this market, and I installed stops in to some of our portfolios, and I still believe that those should be in. My opinion only. Like I said, you can't ever tell which way markets are going to go, and neither can I. But it was such a point where I wanted to make sure that we were protected, so I've got stops in there, and I'm going to initiate more stops this week, and just to be safe, on the safe side. If portfolios have gains, if portfolios have lots of gains, then I want to try to maintain or protect those gains. May, as in an attempt to, no guarantee that that can be done, but stops is commonly thought of as a way to do it. Okay. So, with all the talk about stimulus payments and some of the other things going around in COVID, I want to touch on an idea that I am not in support of, but many people are. And it's the support of what we call a guaranteed basic income. Michael Tubbs, an African-American, and was mayor of Stockton from 2019-2021, and just hired by the Biden administration. That's important, because I want you to keep listening. He had an idea a few years back, and he was seeing the rampant poverty and low income levels of many of the people in his town, Stockton. If you've been down there, it's, you know, kind of a hole. Now, given that Stockton has done a lot to try to improve that situation, they had a lot of poverty down there, but, you know, it's still back then, a couple of years ago, it was pretty bad. And so he wanted to institute the SEED program. The Stockton Economic Empowerment Development Program. Actually, Stockton Economic Empowerment Demonstration, SEED, or the SEED program. It's an implementation that falls along the lines of universal basic income. That's also been called guaranteed income and basic income. It's not a new concept, and it's been tried before in various parts of the world, including a handful of cities in the U.S. and a couple of programs in Finland. The concept is to provide a no-strings-attached periodic income to everyone. The basic principles are payments, periodic payments for sure, cash payment, not vouchers or coupons, but cash in a check, obviously, paid to every citizen, not just every household, every citizen. Universal, it's paid to everyone, regardless of what they make or their situation, and unconditional, so you don't have to have a willingness to work or a requirement to work. Unconditional, they just send it to you. There are variations of this program, and Mayor Tubbs actually did tweak the test program. He limited the number of recipients to 125. He wanted recipients that had a medium income level of somewhere around $46,000 a year. The payments were $500 a month for 24 months, 2 years. Was paid through a debit card and had no restriction on how the money could be spent. He also did not fund it by taxpayers. He funded it through philanthropic donations. So it didn't cost the city anything, per se. After 2 years, they interviewed the recipients. It was found recipients of the payments experienced less stress, were better parents and partners, secured full-time employment in many cases, and had an improved overall sense of well-being. That census was from CBS News article, okay? Now, there was no specific mention on how they arrived at the statistics or the claims, but the reported success of the program has obviously further discussions along the same lines, and Biden has hired this guy now. So, similar program in 2017 in Finland, supposedly reported similar benefits. No doubt the pros and cons of such an idea will be debated. It is hard to imagine that considering the U.S. government put income limits on COVID bailout programs, that they would not put income limits if this program was instigated in the U.S. Basically, remember, the program is just you can just get a check every so often. Now, the questions are obvious. Would a guaranteed income kill incentive to find employment? No doubt it would be argued by some people. Some people would forego seeking employment if they were given a minimum payment. Hey, that's going to happen with a certain amount of people, right? Such is the way of subsidies in human nature. But the thought is that the greater good being served by these payments would far outweigh the few that would take advantage of the program. Others would use the incentive argument to try to nix the whole idea. They say, no, that won't work. Nobody will want to work. So that argument might be tried just to do away with the whole program. Who would pay for it would certainly surround the debate. Governments would not be able to fund such programs on a large scale through donations, right? You couldn't do it through donations. It would have to be done through some sort of funding. Recall that Stockton, who funded it through donations, only had 125 participants. No doubt the usual sources for public spending would be used. Taxation, borrowing through bonds, or creating the funds from the printing press, if on a federal level. Those are the three methods available to the public trust. Such is the source for all government funds as well, of course. Another question is, would the payments that you get be taxed? If everyone did receive the income, if everybody did get a check, it's kind of futile to tax some of the funds away only to give it back to a monthly check. It seems kind of counterintuitive, right? Why not just remove the amount of the check? But then, of course, there's income tax levels that they're going to have to be applicable for, right? So, but the government is known to do these sort of counterintuitive things on occasion. The precedent for taxation of benefits brings to mind the COVID payments and Social Security. If you recall, Social Security was once promised that the proceeds from Social Security never be taxed. And that all changed in 84 under some amendments signed by President Reagan. Portions of Social Security payments are taxed based on income. And for those of you wondering, yes, 1983, your now President Joe Biden did join a bipartisan effort to make 50% of Social Security benefits taxed based on income. So Biden was part of that taxation plan. Concluding, no doubt the debate would be hard-fought and contentious on a basic universal income. The idea of basic income has gained traction since the COVID payments, obviously, with so many people hurting, and the hiring of Michael Tubbs by the Biden administration does bode for more movement toward this direction. The discussions, in my opinion, are only to gain momentum as inequality escalates. Income inequality escalates. Going to drive more talk about this, basic universal income, guaranteed income. And I, for one, think that income inequality will continue to escalate, blamed directly on, in my opinion, the Federal Reserve creating money. And we've talked about that many times in the program, so we will not cover that today. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. We'll be right back with more. And welcome back to Money Matters. My name is Mark Cunaverde. Thanks for joining me today. Well, with all these programs and the talk of basic universal income means that there's more money being printed. And of course, with more money printed, we have to talk about what we've talked about before on the show, which is inflation, right? Inflation is really the deflation of the U.S. dollar or whatever currency you happen to be using. They used to call it deflation. The currency is deflating. But that directed your attention to the manager of the currency, which is the Federal Reserve. So by calling it inflation, it directed your head stage right toward the greedy corporations, which charge too much, which is, in my opinion, not true. You're paying too much because the Federal Reserve creates more and more money in a Mexican peso-like event. I've written a few articles and talked on the show about inflation. And lately, I wrote an article on one. And when I wrote that article, I got a lot of people stopping me in the gym and on the street. Said, hey, I saw your article on inflation. Or I got some emails. And they said, yeah. We are seeing inflation, so you hit it right on the head, Mark. So this tells me that something is up with inflation. I struck a nerve in many people. In other words, many are seeing inflation to the point where they thought enough about inflation to contact me. So yeah, I'm seeing it, and your article said it, so I'm going to write you an email. Without exception, all the comments have confirmed that inflation is alive and well and people are noticing it. That's what they're telling me when they write me, say, oh yeah, I'm seeing a lot of inflation. So inflation is understood by most people as rising prices, right? And although there are many more technically accurate descriptions, rising prices is good enough. What causes inflation, when to expect it, and what harm it does needs further explanation, in my opinion, and we're going to go at it again today, taking on inflation. In a recent articles and also on the show, I detail the various versions of inflation and what causes each version. There are supply demand inflation events. There are regulatory inflationary events. There's all sorts of different inflationary events, but the most dangerous one and the most rampant one and the one easiest to stop by not doing the thing that you're doing to cause it is monetary inflation. Monetary being a derivative of the word money. So we'll call it money inflation, monetary inflation. When I says it's easy to stop, is that it's basically easy not to start it. I'll change that to saying once you've got it going, it's hard to stop, but it is easy to avoid it. Too much money causes it. Too much printing of money, too much creation of a FAW currency, a fiat currency, causes monetary inflation. Once again, I will use the famous words Mexican peso to paint a picture in your brain of what monetary inflation is. Mexican peso may not hold the title for the most inflated currency or the currency that lost the most value. No, it isn't. But it does hold the title of the most untrusted currency in the world by reputation. In actuality, like I said, the Mexican peso is not the worst currency in the world historically or even now. In fact, right now it's not bad. It just seems to have the worst reputation. And that is good enough for illustration. Basically, decades ago, the Mexican government printed up a lot of pesos. It distributed those lots of pesos into the economy. And it did so in a relatively short amount of time. Those three conditions, lots of money, short amount of time, dump them into the VAT, which is the economy, and the result was monetary inflation, and a lot of it. Since all inflations have the same symptom, which is rising prices, the monetary part of the term monetary inflation refers to the cause of it. Monetary inflation, too much money. Like if you had supply inflation, it's because there's a problem with the supply. If you had demand inflation, it's because there was an increase of demand. If you saw something like regulatory inflation, it's because maybe a government body enacted a tariff on something. That would call what we call regulatory inflation. Inflation can be asset specific. In other words, it only happens in one area, geographically, or asset specific in one thing, like gasoline. Can be causation specific. It is caused by only one thing. Like I said, geographically, it's only inflationary in a particular place or location. And currency specific. In other words, you could have inflation only in the Mexican peso because they printed too much of it. In fact, usually it is currency specific, but it can be global as well or regional. In fact, there are many more explanations, reasons, and types of inflation, but when inflation occurs, no matter what it is, by the time people notice it in masse, I think it's spelled, but what it means, by the time everybody notices inflation and talks about it, it's thought to be rampant or soon will be. In economics, inflation, rising prices in itself, is not the culprit that we fear for us economists. So inflation, the rising prices in its definition, is not where the damage is caused, although it is in a way. Rising prices in itself is really not what does the damage. It's kind of. That honor, the thing that does the damage is what we call inflation expectations. Inflation expectations are not the rising prices themselves, but the expectations that people think that prices will rise. It's this expectation that does the most damage because it alters people's behavior. It alters and influences people's buying habits. Now, all of you out there have altered your buying habits at one time or another because of inflation expectations. expectations. Think of the rush to buy real estate during the mid-2000s. Isn't that what all the realtors told you? You have to buy now. The prices will only go up. Houses were snapped up like there was no tomorrow. The rush to buy the house was driven by the fear or anticipation of higher prices tomorrow. I got to buy now because the prices will be higher tomorrow. Same house cost me more tomorrow. The realtors fed that fear. So did the media. I don't want to just blame it on the realtors, but the dot-com fiasco could also be illustration of inflation, but a different type. It wasn't a fear-based expectation. The house will be higher in price. But it was a greed-based expectation. Prices will be rising, so I'll make more money. They're both inflationary. But the cause of why you move forward is a little bit different. One is fear-based, one is greed-based. Doesn't matter. Still inflation. Rising prices. A rush to buy is driven by the expectation of fast profits, like Bitcoin. We can talk about Bitcoin and what I think about it at some point, but in my particular opinion, no. Have people made money on it? Sure. They made money on the dot-com explosion and on houses, and they're doing it on a Bitcoin. But you know what? If you look at the chart of Bitcoin and the percentage of increase, it's the largest bubble in man's history that I know about. The largest mania bubble in man's history. Think about that. If there was no rush to buy, right? It would only be because you didn't expect prices to go up later. If prices were rising, but you didn't expect them to rise anymore, you would not rush to buy today. So the rising prices in the past are rising prices. They exist. But that wouldn't make you buy unless you expected them to rise. So there's a little bit of difference there. If you expected them to go up, that's when it alters your buying habits. It's the expectation of quickly increasing prices is what drives people to buy. Now, I could say that is inflation happening? Well, if inflation wasn't a current hot topic, I could comfortably say that inflation expectations were not an issue. However, the widespread response to my recent articles and newscasts, people are responding. That tells me that inflation is alive, and it is in the minds of consumers. The recent reaction to articles and newscasts tells me that inflation is in the mind of consumers, listeners, and readers. This is the first symptom of inflation. People are reacting to my article in the newscast, and that is the first symptom, is people are noticing it. The first symptom of inflation is people notice it. It's like, hey, boy, this is getting expensive. Then we're in the second phase. People complain about it. First they say, prices are going up. Then they say, whoa. Then they complain about it. They say, whoa, prices are going up. This is terrible. Those are the first two. You notice it, then you complain about it, then you expect it. And the third event is inflationary expectations. And when you expect it, that's when you start altering buying habits. And it's these altering buying habits that causes the worst part of the inflation. What happens is the more you expect inflation, the faster you will buy stuff. It kind of pushes forward your buying. Like, oh, I was going to wait to buy a house, but the price is going up, so I'm going to buy a house. And then another person buys a house, and then another person buys a house. And so when inflation starts to rise, people start to buy things quicker. You push ahead your purchases so you don't pay more later. The faster that rate of exchange is, the faster you start buying things because you expect inflation is the rate of exchange. So money turns hands faster. So the faster the rate of exchange, that is what causes monetary inflation. And because you could have all the money in the economy, billions and billions of dollars that were created, but everybody just sat on them. Everybody just sat on them. Sat on all the currency, and you didn't spend it. But it's this velocity. When money starts to change hands quicker and quicker, the higher prices go. The higher prices go, the greater the monetary expectation of inflation. And that causes even higher velocity. Like in the Mexican peso, when you got some money, the only thing you want to do is get rid of it. When you get rid of it, it goes somewhere else and it increases the velocity. And the next guy gets rid of it. And the next guy gets rid of it. So pretty soon money's circulating in the economy like wildfire because nobody wants to hold it. Because remember, if you own something, something tangible, you're not infected by inflation, at least infected by I say infected on purpose, not affected. You're affected, but you're also infected. You're not infected with inflation if you don't hold a currency. Because inflation, a monetary inflation, is currency specific. It's caused by too much money. If you don't hold the money, you won't get the disease. A vicious inflationary cycle because of increased velocity then feeds on itself. The proverbial genie is out of the body, is out of the bottle, out of the body and out of the bottle. And once that genie is out of the bottle, once it's out and you get inflation expectations, it is very hard to kill. Paul Volcker had to raise interest rates past 20% to kill it last time in the 80s when we had it real bad. So that's monetary inflation. Easy to prevent, very hard to stop once you get it going. And I'll ask you, are we printing a lot of money lately? You betcha. We'll be right back to end the show. My name's Mark Kuhnberg. And welcome back to Your Money Matters. My name is Mark Kuhnberg. That wraps up today's show. Hope you've enjoyed it. It is show 324, right? How high is too high? Well, we'll find out, right? I will say the VXX, which is the volatility index, is down to 12. And that is, in my opinion, danger zone. Be careful. When it's that low, it means complacency. And complacency may mean bad things may be around the corner. Remember, the opinions expressed in this show, my opinions only, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its staff, management, or underwriters. This show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice or a solicitation to buy or sell any security. Our website is moneymanagementradio.com, where everything is free. Our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. My name is Mark Kuhnberg, IELD California Insurance License OL34249, and I'm a Medicare-approved agent in the state of California. Have a great day. Go make some money. It's a hit. A donkey.